Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go across the airwaves. It's Saturday morning on the West Coast. It's a Denver omelet, little country potatoes, sourdough toast, minus the butter and a cup of coffee. On the East Coast, they've already had it, so they're 3 hours in. This is the Doc Talk podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, a friend to me, Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini on the West Coast, producing this in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. It goes quick. It's better than listening to Dan Rather in 60 Minutes. If you happen to miss this show, catch the archive. Tell everybody, because I know it's picking up steam, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet down. Give him the podium. Hand off the mic. The threes, Doc. How are you? Coming back from Clearwater, Florida. Number two,
well,
how can people get a hold of you? And three, you're bringing back the Puerto Rican heartthrob here.
Absolutely. By popular demand. I am doing well. We were in Clearwater. We're home. Back to Pittsburgh. The weather, is incredible. I mean, this looks like spring coming for us. And I know Maryland's talking about warm weather in New Jersey as well. And, again, we're in, late February. So it's a little bit early for spring, but whatever Mother Nature gives us. And, to get a hold of me, as, you've been doing, GJRMD. 308@outlook.com. We have a friend of the show, and again, Marilyn has been on the show several times for us. It's Marilyn Morales, and she has a lot of things that she does. She is a nurse. She's a board certified holistic nurse. She is an author. She just had a new book released in January of this year, When the Answer Is No: Finding Purpose Through Pain. And we wanted to talk a little bit about that and get Marilyn's input on what her book is about and who are we talking about with that. The other issue, which I think may be a little bit of fun today, got several emails, through the Valentine's area, talking about the love language and, how can we strengthen our relationships? And what's the love language all about? And, we've seen recently on a couple of TV shows, especially Drew Barrymore's show, he had had Dr. Gilmore on talking about relationships, strengthening them, and, again, about the love languages. There are five love languages. And Marilyn is going to talk about it with us as well, how we can strengthen our relationships but also feel good about our emotional health. So, Marilyn, good morning. Thank you for being with us, and how are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Doc. I'm doing fantastic, enjoying the warm weather that's coming our way. Looking forward to it. I know it's only February, and we could definitely have a snowstorm coming up, but I'm enjoying this right now.
Yeah, I agree.
It's fantastic.
So we don't want to fight it.
That's right.
I just worry, Marilyn, on the other end of this, are we going to have a heck of a March, a heck of an April? But we'll wait and see.
Absolutely. We just got to wait and see. And people have to remember that there are still infections. You and I'm a nurse, you're a doctor. We're starting to see a lot of continued COVID out there. We're seeing still some flu. And the newest thing that I'm starting to see is gastrointestinal, the stomach virus, is making its way around. So people continue to wash your hands and be careful.
I have to go ahead and, again, very, very true. We're still seeing COVID. I'm seeing a lot of upper respiratory viruses and respiratory infections. But the other thing, Marilyn, I'm seeing is a lot of strep. We're seeing strep throat. And,
it's kind of
unusual. Mm-hmm. Right. So,
yeah, my son just got diagnosed this week, so I know. We just had it in my house.
You're absolutely. Yes. Well, it's hitting everybody. mostly our pediatric population. But I think because of the warmer weather, which could be an issue, and, you know, with viruses and then bacteria, that, again, they're able to go ahead and continue to grow and multiply. So you're right. It's not a disease-free time for us. But we're seeing sick kids. Our adult population still getting a little bit of COVID. So here in that, you know, western Pennsylvania area, yeah, we're not having the severe respiratory infections that we once did, where people were having respiratory failures, needing intubation, tracheostomies,
right.
But we're seeing more upper respiratory. And again, same thing with you, Marilyn?
Same, absolutely the same thing. Fortunately, yeah, the people that are contracting COVID are not dying from COVID, right? We're able to manage
Correct.
Their symptoms. But it's still out there the same way that flu was out there, and flu has been around for how long, right? And we're always
yes,
careful
ma'am.
About that because flu takes lives every single year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So being careful with that. And I think those things sort of mysteriously went away in the last couple of years because everybody was masking, everybody was washing their hands. People were being careful when they were eating and doing those things. And, you know, unfortunately, people are getting done. They're tired of all these precautions, and they're taking more chances. And we're seeing what we're seeing right now, that things are coming
yep.
back, you know, full steam ahead.
You're,
so we just got to
you know,
remember, wash your hands. Wash your hands.
Please wash your hands. I agree with you. You know, the other thing, Marilyn, I think very good point on our health care is, you know, vaccination. You know, people that I've been
right.
talking about, you know, the CDC is talking about vaccination, et cetera. And, again, people have been vaccinated. People have, you know, for COVID, also for, you know, viruses. But, you know, it's such a widespread disease entity that just because you've had a vaccine for a virus, that may not protect you against all viruses. So I think your point is well taken, you know, with regard to washing. Again, avoiding, you know, large crowds, if indeed you can, we're going to stay a lot healthier. But I guess we always have to be very, very vigilant, you know, about our health and disease states. Because, Marilyn, the world is changing. You know, there's a lot of disease out there, and we are susceptible. So very good point.
Absolutely. We are susceptible, and we've always been.
Yes. What are you seeing about vaccines? Are people still getting vaccinated a lot? Are they requiring, you know, are they feeling that the vaccinations are going to protect them?
Well, you know, that controversy has been for a long time, and I think it's going to continue, Doc. And as a healthcare professional, I'm required to be vaccinated. So I'm required to get the flu vaccine. I'm required to get the COVID vaccine. So if I want to continue to do what I like to do, what I love to do, I have to get the vaccination. I'm not against vaccinations myself because I've seen it protect my family. I've seen it protect me in these situations. But I always say that people have to do what feels right to them. What's right for me may not be right for you, but also take into account that there are time-proven ways to protect yourself in addition to the vaccine, and it stops taking chances. You know, if you're immune-suppressed, if you have immune if you're at high risk for complications, then take care of yourself. There are other ways to take care of yourselves as well.
Well, I think, you know, if I can, you know, we're talking about people that have maybe comorbidities. They have
right.
other illnesses going on in their body. Is it correct? That's what you're speaking to?
I am.
And so you know, as far as what does that mean?
So people that are immune suppressed, let's say if you are an asthmatic who is on steroids to help decrease that inflammation that's in your body, right? Those things
yep.
lower your immune system and make you more susceptible to get complications from the flu, COVID, and those other things where someone else may be able to recover at home. You're going to end up in the hospital, right? People
Absolutely.
With high blood pressure, people with cardiac things, when you get sick, it means a whole different thing to you than it does to a healthy 20-year-old, right? So when you
Absolutely.
Know that you have other things that put you at risk for complications or to get sicker than the other person, then take care of yourself. Be smart. You know, you may not want to go out to that restaurant that's packed up with people drinking and doing those kind of things. Even though you want to be there, you have to make decisions for yourself to keep yourself healthy. So there are a lot of ways to keep yourself healthy.
Sure. And, Marilyn, I think we're identifying, you know, as far as the group of patients, the group of people, and you're right, people that may be immunosuppressed, where the immune system is not as strong. They are on steroids. You know, they've been on chemotherapy. You know, they have diabetes. You know, they could have kidney disease. And those are the things we're talking about when we talk about comorbidities and where people are a little more susceptible to getting ill. You follow what I'm saying?
Correct.
And, Marilyn, what about, you know what, you're working at the Brandywine Living as well, which is personal care?
That is actually assisted living communities.
Assisted living. And what precautions, you know, are you instituting there? How do you manage the health care there?
So we actually are bound by what the state tells us that we have to do. The CDC advises people that live in congregate settings where multiple people live there, right? You're not in your home by yourself. We're living among a lot of other people, and there's people that work there that come in and out. So our degree of protection is much higher. We're all wearing masks. We're all constantly washing our hands, hand sanitizer. We're keeping 6-foot distance from one another inside of the community.
Wow.
We're still doing those things in order to protect because we have a high-risk population. When you're older, when you're an elderly person, your immune system naturally wanes. So you're naturally already you're already at risk, and most times you have comorbidities. You have other things that affect your health. So we have to protect the people that live there. So we take extra precautions.
Marilyn, what about nasal swabbing and things? Are you still doing that for COVID? Do you still test for that in that assisted
living?
Yeah,
we still test for that. Yeah, let's say, depending. Like, we have somebody who's a new admission. There are guidelines that the state tells us we have to follow. So someone that is coming in who is newly moving in, if they're vaccinated or unvaccinated, they have to get tested as soon as they come in, and they get tested for up to 2 weeks, right? They have testing periodically throughout those 2 weeks, not every single day, but periodically throughout that time period.
Sure.
Before you can come out and participate in the activities, you have to make sure that you didn't come in with COVID, because if you're among all these other people, you can easily transmit that COVID flu or whatever you have coming in.
Yes.
And so there are precautions that you have to take.
Yeah, as far as if someone, a new admission would come in and they would be positive for COVID, you know, what do you go ahead and do, though, you know, as far as isolation or keeping them out of activities? Are you doing a 5-to-7-day type thing, or are you going to go ahead and reculture? What is the program there in New Jersey?
Yeah, you have to quarantine. You have to quarantine for 10 days minimum. And then you base that also on symptoms. Is that person asymptomatic? Do they have no symptoms because they're vaccinated and they have no or mild symptoms? Or are they very symptomatic, which increases the likelihood that they're going to transmit it to someone?
Sure.
So very case by case, but a minimum of 2 weeks that you have to be in isolation. So they are in a room by themselves. We are using full protective equipment. N95 masks, goggles, face shields, all of it.
Yep.
All of it.
Gloves.
Everything.
Are you using
everything.
Gloves
gowns,
also?
Gloves.
Everything.
Absolutely.
Gowns. Okay.
Absolutely.
And
it's
then,
a head to toe.
Marilyn.
You're covered.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So they're in isolation. And what about the vaccination requirements? Are there vaccination requirements there also with regard to boosters, et cetera, for COVID?
For the staff, not the people who live there. So you greatly encourage them to have that. But if they choose not to, of course, they can still move in if they're right to do so. But they have to understand that they would have to, like I say, first of all, they're going to spend these 2 weeks in quarantine, number one. Number two, when it comes to dealing, being with others in activities, they have to wear masks all the time. They can only sit with others in the dining. Dining, when you're eating, right, that's one of the biggest social times for someone.
Yes.
So you cannot sit with other people that are you can sit with people that are unvaccinated, but you can't sit with people – you can't mix the two. vaccinated and unvaccinated.
And, you know, Marilyn, as far as looking at your level of illness, have you found that to be very successful in keeping that patient population healthier? That works,
yes.
Correct?
Yes, it does work. It does work. It has reduced the symptomology a lot.
Sure.
Like the COVID that we were seeing 2 years ago before vaccines and the COVID symptoms that we're seeing now after vaccines is hugely different. The amount of hospitalizations has decreased. The amount of deaths.
Yes. I agree.
100%.
I think nationwide, but no, you're
nationwide.
Absolutely right. The other thing, too, along with that, is, you know, our hospitals prior to this, you know, didn't have beds. They were full. Well, we're seeing now those beds being released and hospitals having beds again for other acute illnesses, you know, et cetera. So there definitely is an improvement in our health in this country overall. Super. And so that's a real plus. And Marilyn, you know, if we go on with regard to, I'd like to talk about your book to see what's going on with that. And again, tell us a little about it. When the answer is no, finding purpose through pain. Do you want to give us a little bit of a summary on that, Marilyn? And where can get that book?
Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing that up, because you and I have talked about this several times throughout last year, because it was an upcoming book, and it has now been released on January 7th. It is now available on Amazon. And there's a Kindle version, a paperback version, a hardcover version. On my website at izzyslegacy.com, you can purchase a copy from me where I will personally sign it for you. So the book, the title is When the Answer is No, Finding Purpose Through Pain, and it is when we hope and pray for a positive outcome to a difficult situation and you don't get the answer that you wanted. It feels like the universe is giving you a no, a resounding no. So I detail that experience that I went through as a public health nurse in New York City when the World Trade Center was hit. I was there. I have a firsthand account where I talk about what I saw, what I experienced, and most importantly, what I felt, because I then subsequently suffered from PTSD because of what I saw and the fear that overcame me afterwards, right? The constant every single day.
Wow.
Everybody remembers where they were on 9/11. Everybody remembers the days after that, the aftermath, and the constant news that was on and scaring the heck out of us that something else was going to happen right behind that, that, you know, packages, bombs, everywhere. And that is what
we were under attack. You're right.
We were under attack. And it wasn't just on 9/11. It wasn't just that day, just like COVID wasn't one day, right? It was many, 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 many years of the aftermath of all of that. You know, it started that day.
Absolutely.
The day that our lives changed forever. Forever. You know, there's before 9/11, there's after 9/11. And how do we come from that? There are still people that are now reading my book that are telling me they were still stuck on that day. They're still stuck.
Wow.
They haven't been able to move forward from that. They haven't gotten in an airplane. They haven't been able to live life again because of the constant fear that they still feel because of what they witnessed, what they saw, whether they were in New York City that day, whether they were in New Jersey and watched it from across on the bridge, right?
Yes.
Whether they saw it on television, these are images that are burned to memory that we will never forget. Never.
I agree.
But we have to.
Because we've never been attacked like that before.
That's right. That's right. And PTSD is a real thing, right?
Yep.
It is a real thing. It is something that we talk about.
Syndrome. Correct.
That's right. We normally think of it as something that happens to veterans of war. But as I say in the book, that day the war was brought to us, to the civilians, and we weren't ready.
Absolutely.
We weren't ready. It also talks about 7 years after that where I have a child who was diagnosed with a rare leukemia. And I realized, I call that my personal 9/11, because I was going through the same symptoms, even though I had taken steps to recover as best as I could from that first incident. I saw the same symptoms emerge after I lost her a year later.
Wow.
Same symptoms.
My God. What painful situations, Marilyn.
Absolutely. And being a nurse. Being a nurse in both those situations, suffering from something like a PTSD and being a medical professional, having dedicated my life, I'm a nurse since I'm 17 years old, and having dedicated my life to medicine and then feeling that medicine let me down when my child didn't survive.
Oh, my God, yes. And we talked about this country being a great country, excellent treatment everywhere, and then you get into a very complicated situation and find out you were struggling with it, correct? Trying to save your daughter.
Absolutely, because, you know, she needed a bone marrow transplant, stem cell transplant, which is something that is easily done. It's a transplant that you can receive from someone in life, right? We talk about organ transplants, and in the majority of organ transplants, somebody has to die in order for them to gift their organs over for someone else to live. And in this particular situation, your immune system, your bone marrow, that's an organ that's alive and that you can give in life. But not enough people are on that registry. So in our particular case, nobody in the family was a match for her. So we had to search outside of our family to an unrelated donor, someone who was willing to say yes and donate their stem cells to my daughter to help her to live. And so we had to search outside, and that was difficult.
Marilyn, I want to pick all that up and continue that. Mark Mancini has tremendous number of questions in L.A. I'd like to go to those at this point, if I can interrupt the story right now. Mr. Mancini, go ahead in L.A.
Well, yeah, the show's picking up steam. I got some questions. I want to get it back out to you after that to continue this great interview. Joey from Bucks County, PA, basically says autism. He's got an autistic kid. How do you know when you have an autistic kid? They seem to pick that up at an early age when his daughter was born, but now as she's progressing through life, it seems more and more relevant that she's going to be autistic. Great question.
You want to talk about that, Marilyn?
I'm a little bit confused as to the question. Is the question, how do we pick up if someone is autistic at an early age?
Yeah, because they didn't see that when she was born, but now as she's progressing through life, they're picking it up more and more. So I guess they couldn't see it in an early age that she was autistic.
Right, and let me tell you that we have such advances now that things that we weren't able to pick up, like let's say when I was a child, right? I was born in 1969, so in the 70s, 80s, there were people that had autism, right? They just didn't know the symptoms. So your pediatrician is going to be the person to be able to pick those things up. And the parents more so. The parents are going to see that there are things that they're not meeting their milestones. They're not communicating or making eye contact, you know, those milestones that we identify as normal. You're not seeing them. So the parent is the first one to see there's something a little bit different about my child, right? And then you bring it up to the attention of your pediatrician, and they now are able to connect you with other people, whether it's the speech therapist, neuro doctors, neuropsychologists, neuropsychiatrists that can do tests.
Occupational therapy people.
Occupational, yes. Occupational therapy, number one, yes. That can look at these things and say, hey, because autism is a huge spectrum, mild to severe.
You're right.
So you can't just put one person as to what stage, what on this ladder of autism, where they're going to fall. We don't know that. The testing will reveal early intervention is important. So the fact that his daughter is very young, you know, and that she's getting older, but get those services was going to help her integrate into life.
Beautiful.
Albert,
may I pick up that also? You know, I think Marilyn's answer was excellent. And, you know, it's a matter with regard to, you know, milestones. You may notice, as she had said, the child doesn't meet their milestones. Maybe their speech delay, correct, Marilyn? They're not as jocile as the other children. The communication, the happiness. The child's not a happy child, kind of a moody child. But we need our professionals to do that. And that's something, you know, overall, I think Marilyn's absolutely correct. We need our healthcare providers to help do that, diagnose that, give our child specialty care. But I think another important aspect is to maintain the specialty care. Correct, Marilyn? It just doesn't go away. And it's something that we want our child to progress, to mature, to grow. but we need ongoing care for these child. They do have special needs.
That's correct. That's correct.
So, thank you. Go ahead, Mark.
Albert from Poway, California, regular listener on the show, says he had the two original shots and one booster. How do you know that you got to keep taking boosters for this COVID, and why does it wear out so fast? This thing looks like we'll be taking it the rest of our lives. Probably
that's a good question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Every year we got to take a flu shot because the virus mutates. And COVID is a virus, and they are very smart, right? So they find ways around the things that we develop, you know, and it's a matter of playing catch-up. So we all ask that question. How often is this going to happen? How many times is this thing going to mutate? And I wish we had an answer in medicine, but, you know, we're learning this too. You know, we got a lot of specialists, you know, spending a lot of time trying to figure this out. And I don't think we're going to have clear-cut answers anytime soon.
Marilyn, I think that's an excellent answer, and, you know, I think that's the truth. You know, with regard to mutate or change, the vaccines that we take are very specific for a type of virus. And, indeed, when the virus changes, the vaccine that you've taken doesn't work against it. Our body will produce soldiers against the virus that we have the vaccine for. But if there's a new virus and we don't have soldiers, then our body can get attacked and get sick. So it is an ongoing war that we're fighting. And I think two things. We need to see our healthcare professionals, but also we need to take good care of our bodies, keep our immune system strong. You know, with regard to some of the things we've talked about, you know, as far as smoking, drugs, alcohol, you know, we need to take things that keep our body and our immune system in a situation to fight these ongoing attacks. Marilyn, do you agree with that?
You took the words right out of my mouth. We have to be our own advocates. So how do we make our bodies optimal to be able to fight themselves? Our body has the ability to fight these things, right? But let's eat right.
Yes.
Let's get fresh air. Let's get exercise. Let's hydrate. Number one thing is hydration. Drink, drink, drink. Your body is made mostly of water, but we don't drink enough of it. So keeping our bodies as healthy as possible, number one.
Good. I think, Marilyn, I agree with that. You know, if we as our own advocates need to take care of ourselves. We can rely on our healthcare professionals, but we still have to be in the driver's seat here to take good care of ourselves and maintain our health. And again, I say go to the healthcare provider and help you do our guidepost, kind of taking a look at certain things. But indeed, we still have to have the responsibility of taking care of this organism. Do you find that true also?
That's right. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I just got one more, and I'll give it back to you. Steve from Corvallis, Oregon, another regular listener, says, Doc, I can't get enough of your great show. So what you and Marilyn are telling me to do to lose weight and everything is work out with my wife more often in the bedroom.
I don't know what she will say about that. That's a good segue.
But I'm not sure what his question is, right, Marilyn? Yeah, what's his question?
That's a segue into the five, you know, love languages. Let's go to that. That may be your love language. That may not be hers.
That's where we're going to go next here, into that topic. Do you have anything else, Mark?
There's a lot more, but I'll get back to you. I'll keep them posted, and come back to me about 20 minutes after the hour, and I'll load up some more for us.
All right, no problem, but we'll continue. And, Marilyn, you know, what I wanted to do, I wanted to kind of maybe finish up the book just a wee little bit and, you know, talking about the registry and, you know, people that are really in a good position to have a match. You know, looking at some of the statistics that, you know, overall, I think we've discussed it before, and it may be in your new book, where we talk about people that are more likely to have a match are Caucasians, you know, Middle Europeans, you know, people like that, as opposed to, you know, Africans, Caribbeans, Chinese, Koreans, Japanese. They kind of are lower on the list, correct, to have a mask.
That is.
For these.
That is.
Go ahead. And
so,
the,
yeah, just to give some percentages.
Which, yes.
Yeah, just to give
and
some percentages.
Marilyn,
the go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think, again, having that said that, you know, with your philosophy, with what you've been spearheading, you know, Be the Match Registry, et cetera, you're trying to get other ethnic groups into these potential registries so that they can help people of other race and other ethnicity, correct?
That is correct. That is correct.
And,
so if
you,
you
know,
are
and,
if you are white.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to give out some percentages in regards to that, in regards to what you were saying. If you're white, you have a 79% chance of finding someone in that outside registry that's going to match you. And that's a pretty
wow.
good percentage. 79% is nice, right? And if you're talking
that,
about being
baby.
Hispanic.
Can, that's hope, too.
That number, that's hope to me.
Go ahead.
But when I go down to being Hispanic like I am, that drops to 48%. So I've just lost a
wow.
lot of hope there when I see that.
Yes.
If you're African-American, that drops to 29%. 29.
Which is
that
scary.
That to me is unacceptable. It's scary and unacceptable to me. And when you talk about somebody of mixed ethnicity, and in the world that we live in, who is not mixed, right? There are so many mixed
right.
individuals, all different types of races. That percentage could be even lower than that. And you know what? And I probably fall in there somewhat. Because when I put my own results, blood work results, into the registry back in 2008, when I was looking for my daughter, she had people that matched her out there. But when I put my own results, there was nobody there for me. There was no one. There was no
wow.
one there for my other two children. No one. And when
my
I
God.
Saw that, at that time is when I told my husband, no matter what is the outcome, no matter what happens to Isabella, we have to continue to
yes.
raise awareness about this. You know?
Wow.
And we did that on
did
a smaller scale until
for
this
that?
Year. For years,
and,
yeah.
You know,
except I did it small scale. I'm doing it at a bigger scale now.
All right. And Marilyn, where are your allies? Who is helping you with this? Who's out there, you know, touting this? To come out and do this? Do you have allies in the medical world that are helping, or in the business world to help you with this? You're not just a sole provider out there trying to do this. I'm hoping you have other assistants that'll help get through to the public.
Well, Be the Match is the number one. Be the Match partnered with me, Dr. Ron Jacob from Be the Match
yes.
actually wrote the foreword to my book. And here it is, my oldest daughter, who was 9 years old at the time that her sister went through this, she now works for Be the Match. This is what segued us into me writing
wow.
this book, is that she is now the person that helps you find your match. She found purpose from her pain and honors her sister every day in the work that she does. And she is the one who came to me last year and said, Mom, I have patients who are still, it's still hard for me to find their matches. So what happened to us in 2007 is still a reality today, even though this many years have gone by. And that's
yes.
when I made the decision to do something different. So it was brought to me by my daughter who does this. And I said, you know what? I'm not doing enough. I, as an individual, am not doing enough. And I know how much this hurts. And I want to do
absolutely.
Something different. So that's when I began my crusade. So I'm a one-woman crusade.
I understand.
And people
Marilyn,
like you are helping me get the message out.
Well, I'll be more than glad to. Marilyn, if people want to participate, they want to
yeah.
join your crusade, how do they do it?
First of all, go to my website. Go to izzyslegacy.com. If you are between the ages of 18 and 40, you can join the registry from the comfort of your home. You can register online. The kit comes to your house. You don't even have to leave your home. It's a simple swab of the cheek, a little Q-tip on each side of your cheek, and you put it right back into the envelope, all postage paid, right back to them, and they then will store that information. And if somebody that's in need matches your DNA, your HLA
yes.
typing, they will let you know. The next step is saying yes, because you have the right to say no. Just because you match someone doesn't mean that you must go through with it, right? So
right. And Marilyn,
it's a two-part.
How long is that swab good for? How long is that data, you know, in your data bank? You know, is it
until you're 60?
Okay.
You're 60 years old. So I joined at the age of 25. I am in the registry until I'm 60. So I got a couple years left. But
I got it.
But you're in. Even if you join at 40, you're in the registry till you're 60.
Okay. And then, you know, if we talk about someone being on that verge of 60 or so, is it something we ask them then not to participate? Or how do we handle that situation there at the 60-year-old mark?
At the 60-year-old mark, I think that you're just then you're just not matched with someone. And the reason that they're – and it's not an age discrimination kind of thing. It's the fact that the outcome to the patient is increased. Like the best chance for them to survive and not have any side effects from receiving this is from someone who doesn't have comorbidities or who is on a lot of medication and who is very healthy. And that's that 18 to 40 population. So the best chance for that person who's receiving it to survive is if it comes from that person within that age range. But if you're over 40, they still will take it.
And, you know, is the thinking then that if someone, let's say, is over 40, maybe they are 60, that stem cell-wise, their stem cell may not be as healthy or give
that's
our
correct.
Recipient as good a result for life and for living?
That's correct. The same way all of our organs as we age change, right?
Yes.
Our heart at 60 is not the same as our heart when we're 20.
Yes.
None of it is the same.
And so our stem cells are the same way. Our stem cells at 60 are not the same stem cells at 20 or 40.
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
And what
beautiful.
we want to save that person's life. We want them to have the best possibility for recovery, because going through a transplant is life-threatening. You know, you're getting high doses of chemotherapy to eradicate your own system, get rid of it, and then you have
disease,
to have it replaced.
Yes.
And then we have to have it replaced by this donor stem cell, and we want that donor to be able to implant itself and grow. You can't take a chance.
I got it. And Marilyn, you know what? Doing some research, of course, on all this, with regard to something that I read, which puzzled me a wee little bit, with regard to donors, of course, you're correct. You know, the younger the donor, the better. Males, they're stating, may be preferable to nulliparous females. Females that have not had children, they prefer that. They feel the stem cells are healthier. Have you had any rationale on that or any thinking on that, or is that just one of these out points that's in the literature?
That's probably one of those things that are out there in the literature. I really haven't had, you know, and knowing some people that have donated, you know, I know a woman who had 4 children and she
yes.
was chosen, right? So
yes.
there's all different kinds. So it really depends. There's so many different factors, right? It's number one, you need the match. That's most important.
Yes.
If I have nobody out there and you're the only person for me, then guess what? Your match is better than anybody else's because you're the only one I got.
I agree. And, yeah, so as far as a woman having children should not affect her. There's
no
comorbidities. Right. That's your
no,
effect.
Not at all.
But it is something I
no.
see in the literature I thought was a little bit odd. Very
listen,
good.
There's so many different things. It doesn't matter.
Oh,
what
I
we
agree.
Need to do is that person that's 29%, 29%.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
But we can't even look at those things because we don't even have the matches out there.
And Marilyn, you know, as far as helping this whole project, you know, our listeners need to go ahead and get on the registry, get on your website,
and let's increase the number of ethnic groups that are on that registry to give people hope that are in those classes or in those cultures so that there's a chance for life as well, correct?
Absolutely, and especially if you have any kind of diversity in your makeup, in yourself. Isabella's donor was a man from Oklahoma, and he was a Caucasian. He is a Caucasian man. But when I finally communicated with him, I asked him what made him different. Why was he able to match my daughter to the level that I could not? And he shared with me that his grandmother was Mexican. So he had this one little bit of diversity in him. That's it. That little bit allowed him to match my daughter at a higher level than I could. Is that crazy?
Well, that's hard to believe, isn't it?
That's when I say that God is in this story. God is in this story.
It has to be.
And it speaks to us, our connectivity as humans. And he said yes.
Yes.
He got on the registry, and when he asked, he didn't hesitate. He said absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. And Marilyn, what stem cells did you take from that gentleman? Was it a bone marrow or a hematopoietic? What exactly did you take?
Yep. So there's a type where they take it like it's just like giving blood. So they don't go right into your bone. In his case, they didn't have to do that. He was in the hospital. They took it right from his arm, just like giving blood. They took out the stem cells that they needed, and they gave him the rest back.
and he said
his downtime was like a few hours. His downtime was like maybe a half day. He felt a little bit run down. He went to bed at the hotel that they put him up in. And the next day he was out playing with his kids.
Cool. So, Marilyn, with regard to people that are donors and become, you know, called on, they're not putting a lot of their time, effort, or finances at risk. This basically is something they're able to do, and most insurances will pay for all this and help the recipient, correct? So no one is putting
that
dollars.
It's the recipient.
Right.
No, nobody's putting any dollars. This is all volunteer. You don't get paid for this either. So there's no money coming to you for doing this. This is all paid for by the recipient's insurance. There is some time on your end. You have to go and get further testing. So you'll be sent to a hospital near you to get more blood work and to make sure that you are otherwise healthy. So you match at this first step, but you have to continue to test to make sure that you continue to match at a higher level. At a higher level.
So
and that you're healthy because nobody wants a bad effect to you.
Nope. So I wanted our listeners just to get a feel for that, Marilyn, so they understand a little more about getting involved with you and this registry and are able to participate. You know, I'd like to change gears. That was kind of a heavy, you know, heavy discussion. You know, we had talked a little bit about love languages, and, you know, you deal with relationships all the time. And, you know, I've heard a lot about it. Valentine's Day has just passed. And like I'm saying, even some of the TV shows have talked about love language. And Marilyn, in building relationships, do you deal with that in your relationship counseling?
So I don't do relationship counseling. But relationships are a part of all. No, I don't. Our everyday world is all about relationships, right? If I have a patient and they're coming in, one of the first questions we ask is, who's your next of kin and who's there for you? Who's your support system, right? When we're dealing with sicknesses, illnesses, anything, I'm sure same thing with you. You're looking to see who's there. Who am I going to contact if I got to talk to somebody? And these are all relationships. That's what makes the world go around.
Oh, it does. And we are. And again, don't you find also the healthier these relationships and people having someone to rely on, the healthier they are as well, you know, with their lives, with their emotional health, et cetera.
Absolutely. A lot of times illness is stemming from poor relationships. Illness begins before you get sick, right? Something leads up to that. So the stressors that you have in everyday life will lead to that high blood pressure, will lead to those poor decisions of drinking, smoking, excess, you know, eating in excess because we don't feel good about ourselves and we don't feel good about the relationship that we have with people. It stems from that. So the approach to health, and this is the holistic part that I deal with, right, is a holistic approach to illness. It has to be like, let's go back. Let's start today.
Let's go
back to what led up to the sickness, and let's heal it from there so that moving forward, okay, I can fix your symptoms today, but it's just going to go back to that. You're going to continue to be sick if we don't heal what led you to the illness. And that's where relationships go in. And it's not just intimate love relationships.
Sure.
These love languages that we're talking about are for all of our relationships, whether they're family, platonic, work relationships. And we all have a way that we communicate, you know, our love.
And we all want
to
communicate love. Yeah. And, you know, as far as talking to our listeners, you know, how should we approach this? What do you think the best way to approach this is, to give them information about love language? You know, there are five love languages that are in the literature. And, you know, I did a little research on that as well. And, you know, just in general, this does have a profound effect on our health. And I think you mentioned that as well. And, you know, Marilyn, where this all came about was a pastor, Gary Chapman, 30 years ago, found this to be true and put together the five love languages. So kind of neat overall in relationship building, correct, and maintaining relationships.
Absolutely.
You know,
and very accurate.
Very accurate, yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about these as well?
Sure. Let's go to them, right? So what are they?
Yep.
They're words of affirmation, right? Physical touch, which
yes.
one of your listeners were alluding to a little while ago. Physical
yeah.
touch.
Yes, in the bedroom.
In the bedroom.
Right.
Receiving
so that was physical,
gifts.
Very physical. Yeah.
Very physical. And it doesn't have to be that physical. So that's not what that means. He just went there with it, you know?
Yeah.
Receiving gifts.
For him. Yep.
Receiving gifts is another one. Quality time and acts of service. Right? Those are the five.
And
when I looked
Marilyn,
up,
you know, it was for,
what's the most?
Go ahead. Are you still there?
Go ahead. You had a question?
I was just going to say, you know, with regard to these five languages of love, how do we go ahead? How do we, you know, find out about them? You know, how do we know, you know, which is the one that will build our relationship with another human being, you know, with a wife, with a significant other? How does one delve into that and find out what the answers are here to solve this? You know, how would you approach that?
So there's a lot of online tools. This is so popular that there, when you just Google the five love
yes.
languages, all these tests come up, and you can take a test, and depending on the answers that you have, it will tell you where you fall. Now, we all use all five of these.
Okay.
More prevalent. Which is more important out of the five? Which is the most important to you? Which is the one that you need? What are the non-negotiables? Like, for me, this is
sure.
how I – for me, it's access, I took the test. And access
okay,
service.
Good. Yes. And meaning that you like people to help do things for you, correct?
That's what that means. You know, I joke around every Mother's Day, what do you want for Mother's Day? And every year I say to him, a clean house. And it's a joke, right? And he tells me, don't tell me you want a clean house, right? I was like, but that's what I want. I don't want flowers. I don't want candy. I don't want... Because for me, gifts is not going to do it for me. Those things like that
okay.
don't mean anything to me. What means something to me is that you know how hard I work. You know how tired I am. So if you clean the house and I don't have to, that supersedes anything that you could potentially buy me.
Wow. And,
that's,
you know, Marilyn,
that's an example.
That, you know, those love languages, like you mentioned, the service, the gifts, quality time, words of affirmation, physical touch, Is that something, you know, again, is dynamic that changes in a relationship that one has to be cognizant of, that maybe at one time it was words of affirmation. Now maybe it's changed. You know, again, is that the dynamics of relationships?
So it absolutely is. And it can change for some people. And I would say that for me, that's never changed. I've always been the same way. I think at our core, this is who we are as we're growing up. You know, even as a child,
yes,
they have their ways that they, you know, that love for them is what's important. And I've always been the same way. I haven't changed in that order. Like, I used to like when my mom did things for me, my dad did things for me, my siblings did things for me. That for me was more important. And that's the way I like to show love, too, is by doing something for you. I don't like going out and buying gifts. I think that's very stressful to me, right?
Sure.
I'd rather do something for you, and that's how I show it. But I have to make sure that the recipient, the person that I'm doing it for, that that's important to them. And that's where we have this. Not only knowing what your love language is, but knowing that the person that you're doing it for, that that's the language that they speak.
Wow.
Right? It's like me speaking Spanish to you. Are you going to understand me? No.
Probably not.
That could be my preferred way of speaking, but you're not going to understand me.
Correct.
I have to then change.
And
I have to do what you understand.
Beautiful. And Marilyn, how do we find that out? You know, you mentioned a questionnaire. Did you query your family or your significant other about what their love language is to build the relationship? You know, how do you do that? How did you do that to have a successful relationship?
I, some people are just more in tune to these things. My husband and I have different love languages, but I think we picked up on each other's and by vocalizing it. You know, when I vocalize, this is what I need from you versus being quiet and expecting him to be a mind reader and know what I need, you have to be willing communicate what your needs are.
And
you know,
that should help build the relationships.
Absolutely. You have to be able to talk to each other. And if you can't talk to each
other,
then there's a problem with your communication.
And the love language, right, is secondary. Beautiful. Let's
Absolutely.
Go back to Mark. I think this is a big topic. And, you know, I had several emails on this about this relationship building. Mark Mancini, what do you have now? I'm getting notification. Go ahead.
Oh, as we wrap this show, clearing the codes to the close, let me throw a few more in here. Kevin from Malvern, Texas said, I guess the keys to relationships are communicating. That's the biggest thing in my marriage is without that, a marriage falls apart. Any thought, guys? And then
right.
I'll get some more out here.
Go ahead, Marilyn.
I just said that.
Yep.
It's communication. Being able to verbalize your needs. Yeah, we're not mind readers. I'm not a mind reader. He's not a mind reader. We have to be able to tell someone what we need.
Beautiful.
And also
and
listen.
That should indeed.
Part of communication is listening.
Sure. And it's that cycle of speaking, listening, and then responding.
Right.
And that's part of a healthy relationship. So go ahead, Mark.
Right.
Mike from Bellingham, Washington says, thinking of you, Marilyn, as far as when you lose somebody, how hard is it to pick up the pieces? And do you ever pick up the pieces without thinking of your lost child on a daily basis? Nice question.
Wow.
Yeah, so the answer to that is every single day till my last breath, I'm going to be thinking of my child. There's not a day that's going to go by, there's not a minute that I don't remember her, that I don't honor her. I wrote a book about her. You know, it's something that's not going to go away.
Wow.
Healing is continuous. It's not something that happens overnight and all of a sudden you wake up and I'm good. No, there are going to be triggers. And that's why I wrote the book, because when the trigger happens, you have to have tools in your toolbox to deal with that trigger so that you can move forward from that moment and continue to have more positive moments.
And, you know, this is like post-traumatic stress syndrome, a very similar situation, correct? When those memories are triggered, you need tools in your toolbox or you need professionals that have worked with you in order to make life sweet again.
That's right. Even writing the book was a trigger. Writing down my memories. You know, it's good to write things down into journal. One of those, that's a tool for a toolbox, right? To journal your feelings. But it was one that caused me a lot of pain. And as I was writing this book and writing it down for the first time on print, it triggered me. And I had to have a tool at that moment, which is put the pen down, put the computer down, and call somebody in my support system who understood where I was. So I ended up calling the person who went through that day with me because she is the only person that could understand what I saw. So we had a conversation, and she brought me down from a level 10 to a level 5.
Thank God you have those people in your support system.
Absolutely. You have to identify them. You have to identify people in your circle that you can count on, that you can call like that. It's important.
And that's very healthy communication. And, you know, if I can interrupt, Mark, just Marilyn, is there another book in your heart that you're thinking about writing, or you just kind of take it day by day now?
No, there's a second book that's coming, and 100%. I say this, and I allude to it in the first one. The second book is going to be about that one-year journey that my daughter and I were on, because my number one question that people ask me is, how can you still believe in God after all you've been through? And I'm about to answer that question. I'm going to answer
it. Wow, that's heavy. Yes.
It is, because God was there before, God was there during, and God will continue to be there after. And I will show you examples of that.
And Marilyn, you know, if I can speak about your beliefs, do you talk to God, you know, on a daily basis about what you're feeling, what your experience, where you've been? Do you ask him for help in your daily living, if you don't mind sharing that?
Every day. I'm a cradle Catholic, as we call it, right? I was born a Catholic. But regardless of what we label our beliefs, it is the relationship, the personal relationship that you have with our Creator that's important, not what you call it, right? And that you're able to have those conversations within yourself. And every day there's a conversation when I wake up throughout my day. And I can have, just like you would talk to your mother or father, right? If you're upset at something, you're going to have that heated exchange. Well, the same thing can happen with God, right? You can have that heated exchange. Like, what are you doing to me? Like, what is this? You know?
Sure. And I agree. Excellent.
God doesn't give you more than you can handle, right? God doesn't give you more than you can handle. It's one of those things people like to say. And I said, you know what? He just overestimated me. Because I can't handle this.
But you have, and you've done it well, and you've become stronger and smarter and more productive, and you've helped an awful lot of people with what you've been through. Go ahead, Mark. Amen.
Well, we keep getting them. I'll throw one more basically out there, and it's coming in from, looks like Lake Havasu. What is this guy? Carney from Lake Havasu. Basically says, I guess the key is to find a nurse so I can save on my insurance. Marilyn, is there anyone you can recommend across the country so I can save on my medical insurance, which is costing me $500 a month?
I don't know. Maybe
he has a bargain on his insurance. Good. Well,
Hey, we're down to like 2 minutes. 2 minutes, and if you want to cap it, we got to get Marilyn back in here again. I mean, it's just so overwhelming with the comments and everything, trying to keep up with it. But give it a wrap, and we'll talk
Marilyn,
about next week's show.
Go ahead, kind of summarize, you know, for us quickly about your book, and again, future plans, if you could do that for us.
Again, anybody interested in getting a personalized copy of my book, learning more about my mission, learning more about joining the registry, one-stop shop, izzyslegacy.com. You can even send me an email on that. And I didn't mention before, but anybody interested in following me, I am on a YouTube. I have my own podcast. It's called Unscripted with Marilyn Morales. Please get on there, find me, subscribe, share, and I hope you enjoy my show.
Wonderful. Marilyn, thank you. And, you know, from my standpoint, we've had a very good show. We've talked about, you know, very important things. And, you know, Marilyn is an excellent speaker. She has a lot of ways to communicate with her. And I wanted to get that book out there again to help with her registry and to help people that are in need. And, you know, the love languages, like I'm saying, that's kind of a popular comment, building relationships. So maybe take a look at it online. See about them, and see what works in your life and your relationships. So, Mark, thank you. Marilyn, thank you. You know, next
thank you, Dad. Thank you, Mark.
interesting.
No problem at all, Marilyn. Thank you again for all the good time. And, Mark, I'll just mention next week we have, you know, some diseases are seasonal. And gastric peptic ulcers have a higher frequency in the spring, summer. And we're going to talk about stomach ulcers next week with gastroenterologist Dr. Raj Malik, board certified, been doing gastroenterology for a lot of years, a lot of new concepts, as well as talking about the effect of the bacteria H. pylori on this as well. So that should be a very interesting show next week and a lot of good information. So, Mark, go ahead and take it from L.A. What do you want to
do? I'll tell you as we wrap this thing up, Doc, just let everybody know if they're in the greater Pittsburgh area how they can get a hold of you and see your great staff.
Yes, sir. They can get a hold of me. The best way is GJRMD 308 at Outlook.com. Would be glad to go ahead, entertain your emails. We get back to you. My staff is very good at trying to get back within 24 hours. If you need to see me, put that in the email as well. And we'll be glad to set up arrangements for you to come in. So would appreciate your input. And if you need help, go ahead and email me, please. You know, I am an ear, nose, and throat specialist. That's kind of what I do. So I'll be more than glad to help with your problems. Thank you.
Thank you for the lovely Marilyn Morales out there in Jersey. We can't wait to get her back on again. Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Talking to him next week. Yours truly, Mark Mancini. Catch the archive version on Blog Talk Radio. Have a blessed weekend. Stay safe. And make sure you stay healthy. Talk to you next week, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you.